Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
Fantasy Baseball Today coming at you for a second straight day as we ramp up for the start of the 2021 season. Hopefully it'll start on time. Can't say that for sure just yet, but hopefully, fingers crossed. I'm Scott White, first of all, if you don't know me already, and I'm joined today by somebody you should also know pretty well, Chris Towers, back in the fantasy baseball mix here. How's it going, Chris?
I guess if you listened in the last week, but not in the several months beforehand, then you don't know who I am. I'm Chris Towers, fantasy analyst for CBSSports.com, and yeah. I'm back in the baseball mindset, you know?
It's good. Football stuff is over and done.
Well, I still have to write a football newsletter tonight, but, you know, still doing both. Got my hands in both cookie jars.
It's never really over, is it?
No. But, you know, I'm working on rankings for the 2021 season. Those are going to be on CBSSports.com eventually. So I'm excited, you know, finally not, don't get to be the guy who just tells everyone else their rankings are wrong, which is a lot more fun of a position to be in, let me tell you.
You hate doing rankings, I think, more than anybody hates doing rankings.
I hate the process of, like, the minutia of it. The, like, oh, is this guy the number 12 starting pitcher, or is he number 14? And it's just, like, my brain doesn't work all that well with it. You know, I don't do, like, the minor differences. You know, because, you know, it's a range of outcomes.
Yeah, it can be kind of a paralysis by analysis exercise, which, you know, kind of impacted the way I did my dynasty rankings. We're going to get into those a little today because we're talking about dynasty leagues. Yesterday, I had another Chris Welsh, or just the Welsh. I had him on. We talked a lot about prospects. Really, we covered a lot of ground with that podcast if you didn't listen to it. We went a little long, but we covered a lot of ground. I actually wanted to talk to him about The Mandalorian. We didn't even get around to it. Oh, I might bring that up here with Chris Towers, who's much more of a Star Wars nerd than either the Welsh or me.
I got this for Christmas. I love
there
it.
There you go. I assume that's Baby Yoda / Grogu.
That is Grogu / the child.
Yeah, the child.
Canonically has never been referred to as Baby Yoda.
/ the kid. Yeah, see what I mean? Star Wars nerd. He's dropping canonically. Did I say that right? Canonical.
I got my girl Ahsoka.
Okay. These are what are those Pop Funk figures?
Funko for Pop the Toys, yes.
Punk Funk Pop. You gotta
go Pop Toys.
Yeah. For the people who aren't watching on YouTube, you should be. What's that URL, Chris?
YouTube.com/fantasybaseballtoday, I believe.
Okay. All right. But enough of that. Maybe we won't even get to the Mandalorian. I don't know. We got a lot of dynasty talk here to do. I'm going to start here with the email of the day. It's from Anthony Weigel. And it says, I am doing my first 15-team league, and it's a partial dynasty startup. Can you provide just a quick strategy overview of how to draft? Well, that's a very broad question. Anthony Weigel has some smaller questions within this email that we'll get to them. We'll get to them a little later. Interspersed throughout the show. But yeah, dynasty leagues, that's the subject for today. And we're going to kind of frame this discussion around my top 150 dynasty rankings, which were released just before I took a vacation, a little Christmas break, top 150. And I kind of do my dynasty rankings differently to kind of prevent that paralysis by analysis phenomenon. I don't just rank players 1 through 150. I have a scoring system where I look at, I give them a present value grade, a future value grade, and a confidence grade, which is kind of how likely I think they are to meet their present and future value. And I add up those three scores, and you know, obviously there are a lot of ties to break once I add up their three scores, but that at least gets me started. It at least kind of creates this tiering system, and I think it works well. I think if nothing else, it gives people more to get mad about, which is always good when you're posting content. Yeah. Yeah. So it goes a little beyond just ranking them. But yeah, we're going to go through that a little here. So one important thing to remember is that, like, there's no way, like, this is a one size fits all list, right? I have one set of dynasty rankings. Dynasty leagues, of course, are not one size fits all. They vary greatly depending on your rules. The value of prospects varies greatly depending on your rules, how many keepers, how deep the league is, whether or not minor leaguers are kept at a different value than major leaguers. This all makes a major difference. So that's important to keep in mind. But you kind of just have to adjust them knowing your own league settings. The way these came out with that rating system I have, a 31-year-old like Freddie Freeman, who, you know, still has a pretty good amount of his career left, we think, you know, not a very first base, not a demanding position defensively. 31 years old. He checks in at 19th, so he drops, you know, maybe about 10 spots from a redraft league, maybe a little less than that. Then you got like a 34-year-old, like Yu Darvish, not much of a future at all. He comes in 49th. Then you got a 37-year-old like Zach Greinke, still not much of a future, but even less confidence in the immediate and present because of some regression trends we've seen from him. He checks in at 129. So bigger drops from the really old guys like that. Four players got fives across the board for a total of 15 points. One of them is a pitcher, Shane Bieber. He's only 26 years old and obviously was a monster last year. He's one of four players. I'm not going to put him number one just on principle. A pitcher number one in a dynasty league doesn't make sense. So that really comes down to three players you can make a case to go number one in these dynasty rankings. The order I went with is Ronald Acuna, Juan Soto, Fernando Tatis. Chris, talk, because I'm done talking.
Pretty hard to argue with it. I think there's an interesting philosophical question to ask when you look at like someone like Shane Bieber, I think is the key example. He's 26 years old. 26, if he was a position player, 26 is, you still got, you would think five years of at least, you know, you should expect really good production from him. Pitching, it's kind of a little different. You know, you have some guys who tend to hit a wall in their late 20s, some guys who, like Jacob DeGrom, just keep getting better into their mid-30s. Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer would also fall into that, you know, to a certain point. I think we finally saw that point within the last couple of years for both of those guys. But you know, when I'm looking at Shane Bieber, and you initially said, well, he got fives across the board, and I'm thinking, well, you know, 26 for a pitcher isn't really the same thing as 26 for a position player. You know, you wouldn't expect the high level performance. But then I thought, like, the way I look at dynasty leagues and the way I approach them, and you're, I think, a little different than me, but for me, it's like the first 3 years are really like 95% of what I care about. Because so much can happen 3 years from now. 3 years ago, we had never heard the name Shane Bieber. Maybe you had because you get really deep into the prospects. Before the fantasy baseball world as a whole, going into the 2018 season, Shane Bieber wasn't really someone people were talking about, someone that people were really interested in. You know, he was a fringe low 90s throwing prospect who had great control and didn't have like super elite minor league numbers. A lot can change in 3 years is what I'm saying. And so when you look at Shane Bieber, 26, 27, 28 age seasons, yeah, he's probably going to be pretty good. I mean, you know, there's only so much that you can project for a pitcher, but in as much as you can, I think those, the next 3 years. And so, you know, I think when you start looking at like, well, Mookie Betts, you know, he's a little bit older, but he's 28. Mike Trout, 29. Like, maybe you'll see those guys regress, but I think the line between those two, Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, and Acuna, Soto, and Tatis is pretty slim. And obviously, you know, there's, it's 5 and 6 versus 1, 2, 3. So it's a pretty slim margin either.
Right. Right. I mean, the thing about Acuña, Soto, Tatis, the oldest of them is Acuña, who's 23. And this is, these ages are at, going by July 1st next year. He will, I don't know if he's already turned 23. I don't know exactly where his birthday falls, but you know, I'm giving some wiggle room with it. They're very young is the point. They're very young. They're already studly. I could see going Acuña 1, Tatis 2 in strictly a 5x5 context. I would probably put Soto 1 if it was strictly a points league context. As it is, I go Acuña, Soto, Tatis, because Tatis is a little less proven than the other two. But I think that's the obvious top three. You bring up a good point there with Bieber and pitchers in general in a dynasty league. So I'm going to jump ahead to a Twitter question we have here from CJ Baseball. That's what he goes by. When looking at a dynasty league, do you focus more on prospect pitchers, hitters, or is it just available? Now, he's just best available. He's talking about prospects specifically here. But the pitcher versus hitter thing for a dynasty league, I think it's a good conversation point, particularly with what's going on in fantasy baseball right now. I mean, I feel like I've kind of been leading the push for drafting high-end pitchers earlier, but those are proven high-end guys already. I think it's really hard to win without them. I think they're the most impactful players. By nature of being a prospect, there is no proven high-end pitcher prospect. So I, in dynasty leagues, I like to, like, I think the only way you can feel confident you're going to corner a high-end starting pitcher among prospects is if you just have a ton of pitching prospects. And even then, you're still going to get a lot of misses. So I would rather build my prospect base with position players and then trade for the already proven pitchers and assemble a good pitching staff that way. That's how I've been going about it in most of my dynasty leagues.
It's the I can't remember. Theo Epstein Cubs model was you build the pitching staff once you have everything else. You know, you go get John Lester, you go get Yu Darvish. And you know, I'm looking back at 2018 Baseball Prospectus top prospects. This isn't for fantasy, this is just regular, but when you look at, let's say, the top 7 or so hitting prospects: Ronald Acuña, Victor Robles, Gleyber Torres, Vlad Guerrero, Francisco Mejia, Eloy Jimenez, Nick Senzel. That's the top 7. Well, you got Mejia's just a miss so far, and I think Senzel counts as a miss as well. Vlad, somewhat close to that, but you know, he's still been worth
it. Yeah, still very young.
The rest of those guys have pretty much been must-start guys. So 4 out of 7. You look at the top starting pitching prospects from this list: Alex Reyes, Forrest Whitley, Brent Honeywell, Sixto Sanchez, Mitch Keller, Michael Kopech, and Walker Buehler. So Buehler's awesome. And Sixto Sanchez had like 6 really, really good starts. That's it. And so I think that kind of highlights that there's the volatility of pitching just in general. And then there's the volatility of pitching prospects, because you're dealing with injury rates for younger pitchers, which are all going to be higher. You're dealing with guys who haven't shown that they can handle the 150-inning, 180-inning threshold, which, ironically, Walker Buehler among this group probably had proven that the least as of 2018, because I think he had just been drafted in 2017 and was coming off Tommy John surgery, right?
I think he did start out his professional career recovering from Tommy John surgery. So that's, and then you of course have the old acronym TINSTAP. There's no such thing as a pitching prospect, which was coined by somebody at Baseball Prospectus, right?
I think so.
Yeah. So that kind of plays into that. But yeah, I mean, I one of my dynasty type leagues, I had over a span of a few years, I had accumulated like Mackenzie Gore, okay, Forrest Whitley, Brent Honeywell, Brendan McKay, Tristan McKenzie. Like, I had this slew of like great pitching prospects, and I'm pretty sure none of them are going to end up coming through for that team. I moved on from Honeywell, Whitley, and McKay just because they all seem very risky at this point. McKay coming off torn labrum in his shoulder. And then we, of course, know what's going on with Whitley, and Honeywell's just had injury upon injury. I gave up on Tristan McKenzie back when he was having arm troubles. Like, it ended up being kind of premature, but that kind of, that ends up happening too. You make a wrong assessment about a guy who hits a kind of a speed bump along the way. I even ended up moving on from McKenzie Gore just because it's like the way things played out for those others, I don't want him to bottom out too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think to a certain extent, it's true for all prospects, but especially for pitching prospects, their time is never, their value might never be higher than right before they got called up or the day they get called up. And so, you know, it's, I think it's a question of philosophy, but when you're talking specifically about dynasty, I do agree with you. You probably want to build around hitting at least a little more. You want your big swings to be a hitter, because they're more likely to give you not just the, you know, the immediate impact. Although I think they're, you know, you could maybe make a case that pitching prospects are more likely to hit the ground running in the majors and make an impact.
Maybe that's become, I think, less true in recent history,
but
yeah, yeah.
The next 3 years, the next 5 years, hitters are a much safer bet. And, you know, I would also point out, prospect catchers are,
yeah,
like the pitchers of hitters.
Right. Their value gets suppressed in dynasty leagues, you know, relative to mainstream prospect rankings. That happens all the time. It does. You know, so just kind of talking prospects in general, where they wound up in my top 150 for dynasty leagues here. The highest ranked of all prospects is, no surprise, Wander Franco. He checks in at 26th for me, which would be like a third rounder in a 12-team league. He's almost certainly going earlier than that. I don't think I've ever done a dynasty startup mock where he went later than round two.
I think he went top five in one that we did last year.
Yeah, quite possibly. But I don't think that means I have him wrong, at 26. What do you think?
No, I mean, if he played for a different organization, I think they're, you know, his chances of making his major league debut early would be higher. But the Rays tend to be real frustratingly slow with their top prospects. A lot of them see full seasons in the high minors. A lot of them, you know, they're going to try to, like, buy out some arbitration seasons, or like, they're, it's all about cost effectiveness and cost certainty and making sure that that player is truly ready by the time he gets called up. And so in another organization, I would think we probably would have seen Wander Franco last season, even though he was only 19. With the Rays, presumably we see him this year. I don't think it's a guarantee.
Yeah, I want to say it's a guarantee. I think it's a strong possibility. It's less about the fact Wander Franco plays for the Rays for me than just my philosophy toward prospects in general in a dynasty league. I'm never going to be the guy who drafts Wander Franco. I'm never going to be the guy who goes the extra round for the extra big deal, because I don't think, I mean, Wander Franco seems pretty safe, I'll grant that, but I don't think any prospect you can really predict with that much precision what he's going to be at the major league level. So I want lots of good prospects, but there are lots of good prospects out there, and I don't care so much about getting my favorites necessarily. I want the guy who slides, which, you know, I feel like Alex Kirilloff is a guy who slides a lot in these industry drafts. Alec Bohm last year, I felt like, slid a lot. And of course now he seems like a pretty big deal. I'll just take whoever's left over from the many, many prospects that are out there. And you know, there's more than enough to go around, so that I'm just happy doing that. That's not where I want to make my big investment, generally speaking.
I mean, it's, I think there's an interesting one. You have him, Wander Franco, just behind Bo Bichette and just ahead of Xander Bogaerts, two spots ahead of Xander Bogaerts. Now, Bo Bichette, he's only played 79 games in the majors. They've been really good games. Xander Bogaerts has been, you know, one of the best players in fantasy baseball for a half decade, probably longer than that, because he was early on, he was really good in like different ways than he has been the last few years. I think that's a really interesting one. You know, 26 for Wander Franco or 28 for Xander Bogaerts. Xander Bogaerts is 28 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you tell me, you ask me who's going to be better over the next 3 years. I think I'd have to go with Xander Bogaerts. And
I would say that for the next two, for sure. Three, it gets kind of iffy, but that's, you know, that's putting a lot on Wander Franco, which is the point. He might be the only prospect that I'm willing to put that much on, and that's why he does go as high as he does. But I'd still rather be the guy taking him in round three than the guy taking him in round two, which is probably means I'm going to miss him.
Yeah.
Second highest prospect I have here in this Dynasty Top 150 is Mackenzie Gore, a pitcher, at 46. Now, I have him just ahead of Tyler Glasnow, who is 27 years old. I have him two spots ahead of Corbin Burnes, who is 26 years old, older than people might realize, considering he just broke out in 2020. So they're not especially young, and they're still kind of finding their footing. I mean, Tyler Glasnow, the past 2 years combined, has like 110 innings combined the last 2 years. So we still don't really know how he's going to hold up, if he can hold up as a starter. So obviously both of them are more proven than Gore. But I don't think they're truly established yet. I don't know. I'm willing to give the slight edge to Gore there, but I'm going to guess you disagree.
I think in those cases, you know, as good as Corbin Burnes was last season, and you know, he was on a per inning basis one of the best pitchers in fantasy, he still only threw 10 and two thirds innings more last season in his breakout than he did in 2019 when he had an 8.82 ERA. Now, yes, we liked him a lot more than that 8.82 ERA suggested.
You were leading the charge there.
Yeah, he was one of my favorite sleepers last season. He ended up being really good. The stuff is awesome, but we're still dealing with a really, really small sample size. He's thrown 146 and two thirds innings in the majors combined, and he's 26 years old. He's been in for 3 years. And really, not a lot of that has been as a starter, only 13 starts. And so I think I would take Corbin Burnes over Mackenzie Gore just because, you know, the fact that they passed over Mackenzie Gore, you know, what, three different times last season with other prospects when they needed pitchers, just gives me a little bit of pause. It makes me wonder, was there something going on at camp that we weren't able to see? And this kind of brings me to one of the questions I wanted to ask you, which ties into this, was, you know, how are you valuing prospects differently this season than last? Because for the most part, you know, a couple of guys got called up. You know, you look at Patino, the guy who he got traded to
Tampa Bay. Yeah. And the Blake Snell deal.
He did pitch in the majors, but it was what, 11 innings, 9 innings, something like that?
It wasn't much. It was in relief. He looked horrible. A lot of walks.
Doesn't
very young.
Tell us very much about him.
Yeah.
Mackenzie Gore, maybe you watched a live stream of the San Diego Padres training camp. I don't know you know, if they were offering that. I watched a couple for the Marlins, but you know, for the most part, we didn't get to see these guys, and I'm not sure how much the scout writers got to see of them. I presume they have, you know, sources who can tell them stuff, but it feels like we have less, we should have less information, and we have less information about prospects this year than we ever do.
Mm-hmm.
How does that change how you value them in a different year? Would Wander Franco be higher?
Would he be higher? No. Just by virtue of there not being minor league games, there isn't the opportunity for other prospects to close in on his number one status and really narrow the gap there in a way.
I mean,
dynasty. Oh, number one overall. Number one prospect, you're saying that, right?
Yeah, but would he be higher in your dynasty rankings in a different season?
No, I don't think it really changes that. I did have concerns going into this prospect ranking process that I've spent a lot of the offseason doing. That, you know, without new data for anyone, are my rankings just going to be exactly the same as they were last year? And I'm sure they're closer than they normally would be, but it's been going through the process. That's been less of a concern than I thought it would be. You do get nuggets. Baseball America has been especially good about observations from the alternate training site. I don't know who was making those alternate those observations, but somebody was granted access and was making them. And there are some interesting nuggets there that have influenced my opinion on, you know, a decent number of players. And sometimes I just, sometimes just the passage of time and the increase in age for different prospects, you know, now suddenly guys who are 24 and 25 and still in the minors, just by virtue of being that old in the minors, start to look less interesting because, like, have they progressed enough? So there's been a little bit of shuffling around there in my prospect rankings because of that. There's been more than I thought there would be. Less than the typical year, certainly, but more than I thought there'd be.
Yeah, it just, to me, it just adds uncertainty. And I think that goes into what we're kind of talking about with prospects when you're looking at them and comparing them, you know, not just to one another. When you're doing your prospect rankings, if everyone is uncertain, if everyone has this added uncertainty, then it doesn't really change anyone that much, or it changes you on the margin. But when we've got, you know, we saw Shane Bieber break out, or, you know, we saw Corbin Burnes break out. And so when you're talking about Corbin Burnes versus Mackenzie Gore, that is where I think a guy who did play, or at least who we watched play, I feel a little more, I definitely feel more secure drafting them at the very least, both in, you know, redraft and a dynasty league. I think that's probably the way I would phrase it.
Some other prospects here. So remember, I had Mackenzie Gore at 46. Next up among prospects, Jared Kelnick, Andrew Vaughn, Spencer Torkelson. They're 50, 51, and 52 respectively. Then comes the catcher, Adley Rutschman at 70, Julio Rodriguez, young Mariners outfielder at 78. That's about as high as I'm able to put any of those guys. So again, it's Kelnick at 50, and then what, five prospects total, ending with Julio Rodriguez at 78. That's about as high as I'm able to rank them with the tabulation I do, because their present value is so low. Chances are they'll all actually get drafted earlier than that. But again, I'm okay with it, because I think it kind of gets to what I was saying earlier about I'll take the value prospects. I'll take the best of what's left. There's plenty out there. I think in general, particularly the trendy, the most buzzed about prospects, they get drafted too early in general in dynasty leagues. And I'm happy to take the proven 20 something over them, you know, because you still got a future with them. You just have a present as well. And proven, they're proven.
Yeah. And I you know, someone like Julio Rodriguez, I think, is especially interesting because, you know, he played 84 games in 2019 between high A and A ball. He was awesome. 929 OPS, 326 average, you know, just an incredibly toolsy player. You know, people really love the skill set, the physicality, but, you know, we've never seen him play above in the high minors. And, you know, this brings me to another question, and then we'll move on from the prospects part. But what do you expect from someone like Julio Rodriguez in 2021? Where do you think he'll start? You know, he's played 17 games above, you know, regular Class A ball.
Yeah, he got to high Class A at the end of 2019 and dominated there for what it's worth. I suspect he'll start a Double A, but it may be high Class A again. The feeling around Julio Rodriguez is that he's going to move fast. There's kind of that Juan Soto vibe about how quickly he's going to move.
Very physically mature.
Yeah. And like, he's an awesome prospect. I'd be happy to take him at 78, you know, in a dynasty league. I'm just not going to be able to get him. That's just not going to work out. And that being said, that it gets to what I was saying earlier about, you know, this is a one size fits all list for what can't be a one size fits all exercise. It depends on the way your league is actually set up. Anthony Weigel, who again, referring to his email, the way his dynasty league is set up here, 15 teams, the keepers are 7 MLB players. So just 7, 10 minor leaguers. And they lose minor league status when they graduate from, when they lose their rookie eligibility. So to crack your list of 7 MLB keepers, you have to feel really confident once they've exhausted their rookie eligibility that they're going to be the real deal. And I play in a league like that. It's actually that same league I was mentioning to you where I traded away all those pitchers that weren't panning out because I was starting to feel not so confident that they were going to crack my small group of major league keepers, even when they did get the call. In that kind of dynasty type format, there's enough turnover happening with so many MLB players not being kept that like you don't really need to have that farm system sustaining your major league roster. You know, like that's not the dynasty format where you really go heavily after the prospects. They're just kind of bonuses if they pan out, I feel like.
Yeah. And I think one suggestion I would add would just be, you know, it also depends on how you want to build your team. If you want to be the guy who's building for 5 years, you know, a sustainable 5-year plan, then, you know, maybe you bump up the younger guys. You know, maybe you just copy and paste this ranking and add one to the future value for everyone. Or conversely, if you want to be the guy who competes for the next 3 years and then figure it out, or has a really strong team in year one and then starts trading pieces off, maybe you know, boost the present value for everyone or something like that. So, you know, that's the thing about Dynasty is it's not just your league type. It's how you want to build your team that plays into it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. One other question here from Anthony Weagle. How many of the prospects he drafts should be long-term versus short-term, the guys who are going to help more immediately? I'm probably unusual among fantasy analysts that I think I value proximity more than most. I want a constant cycle of minor leaguers because they're gonna sink or swim, right? You want to give more a chance to swim than to put all your eggs on a guy you're going to wait 3 or 4 years to find out if he's going to develop into something worthwhile, you know? So I'm going to miss out on a lot of exciting international signees doing it that way, but I'm giving myself more chance to hit big just because I'm able to move on from a guy quicker and not waste so many years waiting for him to develop. I gather you're kind of the same way too, though.
Yeah, and it's less about that and you know, or at least as much about that as it is about certainty. The guys who, you know, if you look at it, I think there's a theory about why we've never encountered intelligent life in the universe. Stay with
me. Yeah. Okay. We might get into the Mandalorian. This might be a good tie-in.
It's what's it called? It's like the great filter, I think is what it's called. Okay. And it posits that at various stages through the evolution of an organism or a planet or an organisms, life, there come certain moments that come with a, you know, X probability of happening that can cause that the evolution to stop. And so it's like the, you know, in the history of the Earth, it's like the development of you know, the asteroids hitting at different times, and then the, you know, the plate tectonics and the, you know, the development of oxygen in the atmosphere and all these things throughout. And you know, all to tie that in, you know, the theory is that at some point, you know, an advanced civilization reaches a point where it, you know, peters out for some reason. And that's why we've never seen them. There's just so many filters. And that's kind of the way I view prospects, is that every year there's an X probability of every prospect hitting a wall or not developing or getting hurt or something happening. And when you're 4 years away from the majors or 3 years away from the majors, there's just more opportunities for things to go wrong. That being said, there are also more opportunities for things to go right. But there are fewer Fernando Tatis in the world than there are, you know, Esteban Florials. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy who looks like a prospect when he's 18, and then, you know, by the time he's 22, we're like, oh no, not really. He might be a fourth outfielder.
Yeah. And a lot of times the thing that goes right comes from the player you don't really see it coming from. Like Ronald Acuna was not a big international signing.
Yeah.
And then as he made his way up through the minors, it's like, wow, the Braves really found somebody here. So Yeah, I don't take big swings with prospects, just generally speaking. I like prospects. You know, my dynasty league, my 24 team one that's referenced here a lot, it has a bigger emphasis on prospects. It's one of those dynasty leagues that I think requires more of one than the league Anthony Weigel's presenting here, because it's not just okay, prospects are, you can have them for a long time and they have a chance to be really, really good, but they're also going to be very cheap to keep for a long time. And that's really where prospects start to have more value. But even in that format, you know, whenever I've gone for the teenager who is supposed to be a really big deal, maybe 3 or 4 years from now, it's almost always gone wrong. It went right with Rafael Devers. That was one that panned out. But, you know, generally speaking, I've had more success going with the safer prospects, and a lot of them have turned into studs.
I think that makes sense. Yeah. Here's a question I had. How are you handling last year's breakouts? How much stock are you putting into the short season breakout for a dynasty player? Now, you have Shane Bieber, number 6 overall. A lot of that is because he was the number one player in roto scoring in fantasy last season per CBS Fantasy's formula. But he was really good in 2019 as well.
He was, yeah. Got drafted in, he was a second rounder going into 2020. So, yeah.
And so I'm more interested in, like, that makes sense. I maybe he regresses some from being the best pitcher in fantasy, but in all likelihood, he's still going to be very, very good. It's hard for you to, he probably won't miss. I think, like, Trevor Bauer is a really interesting one, and you have him
34th
overall. 5 present value. He is 30. How much of that is skepticism about what he did in 2020? How much of that is age? How much of that is, you know, what have you?
Well, both. It's both, because I have him 34th here in dynasty rankings. In my dynasty rankings, he is more like, I don't know, 15th, 16th in redraft rankings. So I'm giving him a pretty big downgrade for the long-term format, because I'm not totally sold on him being who he was last year, and because he's clearly in the middle stages of his career, if not toward the tail end. So, you know, you mentioned I gave him a 5 for present value. It's the highest score, obviously. Gave him a 3 for future value. I gave him a 3 for confidence. And I don't think anyone I rank ahead of him at 34 has lower than a 3 for confidence. So among the high-end players, he gets a lower confidence score from me. And it's because of skepticism. Like, it's easier when you're talking about a redraft scenario to trust in the breakthrough than it is in dynasty, where you're maybe tied to this guy for years to come, no matter what he turns into, or you're denying yourself a chance to be tied to somebody else for several years because you invested in Bauer. So yeah, that skepticism does play into the dynasty rankings, and I think it should.
And then I think Kyle Tucker is really interesting. Number 31 overall. You know, what's funny is he basically has 2 small sample sizes in the majors, like 25 games in 22 games in 2019, 58 in 2020. He was basically the same player across both of those 2 samples, which, you know, to a certain extent sort of makes it easier to buy into what he's done. And that's, you know, hit 268 across those 80 games with 13 homers, 13 stolen bases, 162 game sample, 27 steals, 27 homers, only caught stealing 3 times. Manageable strikeout rate, not terrible plate discipline. How confident are you in him both in 2021 and then in the long term?
Now, what's interesting about this is I'm actually, even though he's, so I have him ranked higher than Trevor Bauer here. I have him 3 spots ahead of Bauer. For 2021, I obviously want Bauer.
Yes.
And I might even say I'm more, not just that Bauer has the higher impact potential, reigning Cy Young winner, but I might actually be more confident in him for 2021 specifically, just because there is such a small sample there from Tucker. But Tucker has been a top prospect from the day he was drafted. He put up back-to-back seasons at AAA that were just amazing statistically. He's only 24 years old. I don't based on what he's done now, the small samples in 2020 and even 2019, like, I feel like he's going to be who he was projected to be. I don't know if there might be some growing pains along the way, but from a dynasty perspective, you're getting him at a very early stage of his career. You're getting somebody who it looks like is going to be a big steal source, which certainly in 5x5 leagues, you want to lock those guys in wherever, whenever possible. So yeah, that's an interesting comparison between those two. Tucker comes out a little ahead for me and Bauer in these dynasty rankings, but of course Bauer's the better bet for 2021.
And I think it's very interesting that Kyle Tucker is five spots ahead of Luis Robert. This time a year ago, Luis Robert probably would have been 20, 25 spots ahead, at least for most people. You know,
for most people.
In redraft, it was like 100 pick gap between the two of them.
Well, we were on the same page, yeah. The two of us, that, like, you know, we're not so sure Tucker's going to be any worse than Luis Robert. He might be better. And he was.
Yeah.
And he was. Good for us. Yeah.
And then one other question I'll ask, and then, or one other topic to broach, and then I'll let you get to some more of your notes. It's just, you know, some of those old guys, you know, how do you differentiate between, you know, I'm trying to think of like a Kenta Maeda who's 33 years old versus, you know, someone who actually, here's a really interesting example. Kenta Maeda, 33, or Luis Severino, 27. You know, Severino obviously coming back from the Tommy John surgery. You have Kenta Maeda two spots higher. Is that, to me, that seems like Severino is a big win, big lose kind of guy, whereas Maeda seems like a more certain thing. Is that how you view it as well?
Well, according to the scores I give them, no, because I actually give them the same confidence rating of 2.
Okay.
On the 1 to 5 scale. Now it's different reasons for that. Maeda just did something we'd never seen him do before.
Yeah.
We, awesome. Including myself, were kind of hopeful that he could be something like he was this year, but, you know, small sample size for a guy who's,
the concerns that we had about him would specifically not be answered by a 60 game season.
Right.
Yeah. I think some of it was, can he be good in a starting role or as a real starter? I feel very confident he can be, and I felt very confident he could be before that. How will he handle 180 innings? That, I think, is the still remaining question.
Yeah, that's part of it, sure. So a part of it is just Kenta Maeda is, I think, is he 10th or do I have him 12th among starting pitchers in just regular redraft rankings? He's really high. Because given that there were some risks for really all the guys in that vicinity, it didn't seem appropriate for me to downgrade him behind like a Jack Flaherty, let's say, after what Kenta Maeda just did. So I give him a 5 score for present value, him being 33, only a 2 for future value. And again, 2 for confidence. And Luis Severino, it's the same, it adds up to the same number. He's 2 for present value because he's going to come back mid season, maybe.
Yeah.
And then 5 for future value, because we all know he's top 10 potential when healthy. I have a lot of confidence in the Tommy John recovery, but still just a 2 for confidence because we got to actually see him come back. 27 years old. He's still in the prime of his career. I think it's hard to compare those two, Maeda and Severino. It's you know, how committed are you to winning in 2021 is a big part of that. And if you're not really at all, then of course it makes sense to take Severino instead. But Severino versus the other big pitchers coming back from Tommy John surgery at some point in 2021, which are Chris Sale and Noah Syndergaard.
Yeah.
So I have Severino at 79, 2 spots behind Maeda. I have Sale at 130. Now he's 32 years old, so that kind of makes sense. But I have Syndergaard at 131. He's 28, only a year older than Severino.
Yeah.
That is because I feel like they're kind of on different planes now in terms of upside. I mean, Syndergaard's numbers were really falling off, particularly the strikeouts leading up to his lost year. And I have less confidence in who he's going to be when he comes back than I do Severino. I mean, 131, that's still, given the upside at a position of great demand, that's still a good value pick. I mean, I love and Dynasty Restart, Dynasty Startup Leagues, I love taking these guys coming off Tommy John surgery because I just have so much confidence in the recovery and people tend to overlook them. Yeah. But of those three, I clearly have the most confidence in Severino.
I agree with that just because he was more reliable. He was better than those two guys. You know, in the immediate preceding seasons. I think Syndergaard versus Gonsolin is really interesting. I don't think we need to get too far into that, but Gonsolin's only a year younger.
Yeah. So I have Gonsolin four spots ahead of Syndergaard.
Yeah. Sorry, I should have said that.
Yeah. It is interesting.
ERA, 46 and two-thirds innings last season. He does have, you know, a 260 ERA and 86 and two-thirds, mostly as a starter for the Dodgers.
So it's a combination of I really like Gonsolin. I've kind of soured on Syndergaard. And, you know, how committed are you to 2021? Again, because Gonsolin is going to be a contributor in 2021. Syndergaard, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not counting on much from him in 2021. So if you're completely punting on 2021, I think it makes sense to take Syndergaard ahead. But if not, it's pretty close as I have it. We do need to take a break, and then we're going to get into more of these major leaguers, interesting major leaguers from a dynasty perspective. You're listening to Fantasy Baseball Today.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome back. Scott White, Chris Towers here, Fantasy Baseball Today. We're talking to you about Dynasty Leagues. Chris's cat is walking across.
Saying, if you're watching, this is a good reason to subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Fantasy Baseball Today, because
just a tail waving in his face.
Multiple cats have crossed. As soon as I start talking, as soon as they see the camera light go on, they're just, it's time to move about.
Fortunately, we didn't see the back end of that cat because that would not have been a view anybody appreciated. We're looking at my top 150 for Dynasty Leagues here. And we've talked a little about the guys coming back from Tommy John surgery. Three young guys who were really excited about in Dynasty Leagues at this time a year ago, and they just didn't live up to the hype. Yordan Alvarez, Keston Hiura, Vladimir Guerrero. They're all younger than 25. They still check in at 39, 40, and 41 in my Dynasty rankings. So to put that in perspective, 38 is Pete Alonso, who kind of disappointed himself. Luis Robert is 36, and then, you know, behind that group is like DJ LeMahieu and Tim Anderson. Do you think that's appropriate for Yordan Alvarez, Keston Hiura, Vladimir Guerrero?
Could be a little bit high for Hiura and Guerrero, just because what went wrong for them in 2020 was that they just didn't play well, and they kind of have what looked like, if they don't improve upon them, kind of glaring issues. You know, here it's the contact issue. You know, he just swings and misses way too much. And Guerrero, it's just that he just doesn't hit the ball that well. You know, he makes okay contact. You know, he's still right about a league average strikeout rate, but it's just a lot of ground balls and not that much authority. And so I guess it's in a way giving Alvarez a little extra credit on those guys, because he didn't get the chance to disappoint us last season.
Coming off surgery on both knees, I think.
Yeah, and he's, right? So there's that. 23 years old and seems to have kind of degenerative issues in his knees, which is not what you want.
Yeah, I'm kind of relieved he had surgery. I feel better about investing in him with a correction applied versus we don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So that makes me feel more confident in drafting him. But I guess my point here with these three is, like, I don't think whatever happened in 2020, this gets into how much are you weighing 2020 stats in general, particularly for high upside guys that we were this excited about 60 games ago, you know? You don't want to abandon those. And nobody seems to be abandoning Guerrero specifically. Hira to a lesser extent. Alvarez is the one who can slip. Alvarez can slip quite away, which is interesting because he's the most proven by far. And he was basically a first-round caliber bat in 2019. DH only, but whatever. Kind of along that same lines, Gleyber Torres, who had a year and a half that were really good, and he's only 24 years old. He tends to slip a lot in redraft leagues, Gleyber Torres. He's shortstop only right now, at least on CBS, no longer second base eligible. I still have him at 42 here, just because the future for him at age 24 is so bright.
Played 42 games last season. You know, that's one of those things where it's like, if a guy has 42 games where he has a 714 OPS, roughly, I think is what he would have had, or what he did have, you don't even blink. If he plays 160 games where, you know, the other 118 are really good. I think it's probably fair to mostly overlook that with Gleyber Torres.
So Carlos Correa, who kind of in the same boat and bounced back in a big way in the playoffs. I think he had more than half his home runs in 2020 in the playoffs. He's a couple years older than Torres, but 26. Mm-hmm. And I have him at 59. I was getting some comments about him on Twitter. Some people thought that was kind of high. I mean, Carlos Correa is a guy who has been a first rounder a couple times in his career. Like, he's kind of where we were with Corey Seager at this time last year, and you see how that turned out. Definitely somebody I'm still willing to invest in dynasty leagues. Javier Baez, I kind of lumped these three shortstops together as guys everybody believed in, but they were just did not live up to expectations in the short 2020 season. He's already 28, so he's a little lower for me. I have him at 73, but still pretty good. Pretty good time to buy in again in dynasty leagues, I feel like. Joe Adell is 84. That puts him just a little behind Julio Rodriguez, the 20-year-old Mariners outfield prospect. Joe Adell doesn't qualify as a prospect anymore. He was terrible. The little bit we saw him in the majors last year, just striking out way too much. And, you know, that tells you the extent to which his prospect status has slipped, which is not really that much. I mean, 84th on this list, just behind Julio Rodriguez. If he did qualify as a prospect, Adell would probably be in my top 10 still.
And worth pointing out, we don't know when opening day will be, but he probably won't be 22 by opening day. He turns 22 on April 8th. He's one of those guys where if he hadn't played in 2020, probably 40 spots higher. And that's not to say he shouldn't be 84, because he did play in the majors and he did strike out 55 times in 38 games, and that counts. But you know, his value is hurt by the fact that he did play, whereas some of the other, you know, a Julio Rodriguez, it's possible that he might have gotten to Double A last year and had a 770 OPS, in which case he probably falls at least a little bit. And so that's the tough thing about this shortened season, is how much to take out of it, how much to move certain guys down. I think 84 is reasonable for Joe Adell.
I have him just ahead of a trio of high-impact 34-year-olds, Carlos Carrasco, Jose Abreu, Lance Lynn. Obviously not much longevity from players like that, but they should be highly impactful, at least for 2021. Randy Arozarena, who does technically qualify as a prospect and a rookie still, He checks in at 101 for me, which is about the same as where I have him in redraft. So his prospect status isn't really doing him much good in my dynasty rankings.
0% chance you will draft him in either redraft or dynasty at 101.
Redraft, I've seen him go about that late. Has the NFBC data shown otherwise?
I admittedly haven't looked at it that closely. I assumed he would have been much higher than that, given, you know, I don't think I've seen a single person on fantasy Twitter express much. 57, yeah.
Yeah.
Overall, 58.74.
NFBC ADP sells out really hard for upside. So I imagine he'll be lower on some of the other fantasy baseball
and that
services.
Makes sense, on that format, because there is a lot of best ball formats there, and Randy Arozarena is the kind of guy who, if he does what he did last year to, you know, if he does 80% of what he did last season, you know, getting him at the 57th overall pick is going to be a steal.
He gets pushed down that far in these rankings, and I think it's appropriate. Relative to other top 100 type players, just a very low confidence score, relatively speaking. And he's already 26, even though he's technically a prospect. He's already in the prime of his career, not pre-prime. Yoan Moncada and Austin Meadows, both also 26, are just below Arozarena. And
it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, we got a couple Twitter questions to address here, but I want to talk a little about The Mandalorian because I didn't get to yesterday. Actually,
let's do the Twitter questions first and close out the show with some Mando.
All right, fine.
We'll talk about Din later. You can't have your Din before your desserts.
Jeff Collier asks, what kind of package would it take for you to part with Wander Franco in a Dynasty League? We kind of got into this already. How much we value Wander Franco. Now, what's interesting about this, we had Ian Kahn, the actor / fantasy baseball analyst, on at some point in December. And he showed me his dynasty rankings, and he had prospects, generally speaking, a lot more prospects, a lot higher than I do. Mm-hmm. But his reasoning was because that's what people want in Yeah. Just for trade, but he drafts them that high just to have them to sell off of major leaguers.
Yeah, I think how do you value Wander Franco and what would you trade him for are two different questions, because how you value him moving forward for your team is what you expect him to produce. And there's a wide range of possible outcomes. But when you're trading him, presumably your whole league knows that he's available, and presumably their offers should cover a pretty wide range of outcomes. And there's going to be someone in your league who views Wander Franco. This is true of every prospect in every league, especially the top ones. There is someone who is 100% convinced Wander Franco is the next Ronald Acuna, Fernando Tatis, Mike Trout. And so you should get that kind of value for him.
Yeah, you should get more than one. Is it more than two? I don't know. But more than one major leaguer who you could expect to keep for a long time himself and is already good and is established. And that's really the only way that it's going to be worth it. And even that depends on, exactly how the keeper rules work in your league, major leaguers versus minor leaguers. League more like my 24-team dynasty league that values prospects more. It should be more than two major leaguers that you're getting back. It should be more like three or four. But one like the emailer whose name I'm forgetting, even though I mentioned it several times, where you don't get many major league spots to keep and they lose players, lose their minor league status fast, then you might have to settle for only two if you want to do that. And maybe you don't. Yeah, Jeff Watson has a trade.
So I was just looking at your rankings and like Xander Bogaerts and Zach Gallen. Would you do that? Give up Wander Franco to get those two guys?
Yeah, in most dynasty leagues, I would, sure.
Do you think someone would offer you that?
No.
Okay.
I don't, but maybe. It just depends. It depends. Do you think somebody would?
I could see it.
I could see it in the right circumstance, yeah. Like a rebuilder who, I could see it.
Yeah.
But Jeff Watson wants to know, how would you value prospects when looking to trade two for one or vice versa in dynasty leagues? So, I think the Ian Kahn logic applies here, where if you're giving up a high end prospect, you should probably be on the two side of that deal.
Yeah.
And it's different from, you know, I talk in redraft leagues a lot where on in a trade, I normally want to be on the side getting the best player. You normally don't want to be on the two side. But it's the answer here is predicated on the belief that people overpay for prospects in dynasty leagues, generally speaking. So, you know, it depends on obviously who the two players are, but if they're two really good, established, fairly young players, that's probably more valuable than any prospect.
And one thing I would add to that is, if you're trading multiple prospects, you are increasing your risk, because that is one thing that, you know, the chances of any one prospect turning into a superstar are relatively low. But if you're trading, you know, two top 20 prospects or three top 50 prospects, then that's when you really start have to get a really have to get a premium back, because the chances of any one of those guys hitting in that way that makes them incredibly, incredibly valuable, it does go up. You know, that's the way I view it.
My thoughts on The Mandalorian are complicated. I wish I had recorded. Chris Welsh ended up and I ended up having this conversation after we stopped recording. We should have just recorded it and presented it as like a bonus episode. I don't know, because it was good stuff. And I have a feeling you and I are not going to be on the same page like he and okay. I so were. I binged The Mandalorian during my time off. It's 16 episodes. Most are closer to half an hour than an hour. So very bingeable.
I think the longest one is like 47 minutes or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Very bingeable. And look, entertaining. Like my stance on Star Wars in general is that they're all fine. They're all fine. None of them ascend to greatness. None of them are really that bad either. They're all entertaining enough to watch. Episode 9 was pretty boring. Episode 9 is probably actually the low point for the series. But for the most part, all Star Wars is basically fine, and I don't really get the hype on either end. I mean, look, it's there is not a lot of moral ambiguity going on in any of these stories. There's not a lot of character development, I feel like. Like, part of my issue with Star Wars is I never really care that much about anybody.
I will just say this. It's unlikely that you will ever, I know you're a father and you're a busy man, but if your son ever wants to watch some cartoons, these Star Wars cartoons are actually really, really good. And I think they're arguably the best part of the world.
Are they better than The Mandalorian? Because I kind of haven't built to my point yet, which is that, having said that, I think The Mandalorian is the best Star Wars I've seen so far.
Okay. Yeah.
It still suffers from a lot of what Star Wars suffers from in general, and that it's kind of a lot of action. It relies heavily on action sequences, and it still doesn't make me care that much about the characters involved in those action sequences. Contrasting that to like the MCU, which did a great job at both. Mm-hmm. I feel like Star Wars has always come up short there. And so my experience going through The Mandalorian for the first 14 of the 16 episodes was basically, it's pretty good. Does it live up to the hype? I don't know. Like, I love the guest stars, Bill Burr showing up, you know, very Timothy shocking. Oliphant showing up, Giancarlo Esposito. You know, great guest stars. I love that. And, you know, some imaginative stuff, as Star Wars has always, the things Star Wars has always excelled at.
Yeah.
But then I got to the last two of the 16 episodes, and it didn't get me all the way in.
Okay.
But it definitely was like, whoa, this is better than it's ever been before.
Maybe you just hate Grogu.
Maybe I just like, that's kind of the thing. Like, why should I care about Grogu? Because
he's adorable.
Because he does cute things. He's like adorable, eat the anthropomorphic frog ladies. Look, okay. Babies.
He didn't know any better.
Yeah, but
like, that, no, hold on. That is on Din for not feeding him. You have a child. Feed your child, Din.
I mean, kind of
he had to steal macarons from some small child in the desert just to survive.
Kind of the problem with Star Wars too is that there's an anthropomorphic frog lady. Like, you can't get any more inventive
I really
with your species than that.
Did you watch it with subtitles?
Yeah, I did.
It was like Frog Lady makes frog noises or something was the subtitle. I loved it. It was delightful. No, yeah. I think all of that makes perfect sense. And I was more on the I like the Star Wars world more than the actual Star Wars. I like the universe more than the actual stories. Until I watched Clone Wars and Rebels, I think those do a
the cartoon good job. Series.
Yeah, the first, the two. There's a third one that's not. I haven't watched it, but I've heard it's not as good. But Clone Wars and Rebels, excellent character building, excellent world building, a ton of stuff in there with like, hey, we're gonna. It's all like adventure of the week, kind of like Mandalorian, where it's like, here we're in a new place this week, and here's some new people, and you're gonna see like, here's how the planet Mandalore works, and it really adds a ton of stuff to it, and it makes like Clone Wars makes Anakin Skywalker in the prequel trilogy a lot better of a character, which is not an endorsement of the prequel trilogies, because if you have to watch seven seasons of a cartoon for a three movie series to be good, that's probably not a good three movie series. But I think those are excellent. It's like really the best thing I can say about Mandalorian is it made me feel the way I felt watching Star Wars as a kid.
Yeah.
Like it reignited that wonder in me. And then I went and watched Clone Wars, and then I went and watched Rebels, and those, like, I'm all in now. I got like the video games. I've been all in. This is my 2020 was my Star Wars year.
Yeah. No, you've always been a big Star Wars, at least as long as I've known, you've been a big Star Wars nerd. And I've just been kind of the guy like, it's fine. Mandalorian's a little better than fine. I will give it that. It's a little better than fine. I think Bill Burr's my favorite part of it. Anyway, that's all we have time for. We went too long again. We will be back with you later this week, I believe, Thursday morning. We'll be back with you, Chris and I. Until then, bye-bye.
If you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. What are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood best? And why can't all this information just be in one place? Well, now it is on Homes.com. As somebody who's been through this, I can tell you these features are so, so incredibly valuable. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. The area you live in is just as important as the house itself. You can get to know a neighborhood without ever setting foot in it. Say you're a really active person. You could find out about the nearest parks. Do they have a baseball field? Maybe you want to join a softball league like Chris and I play in. Also, Homes.com collaboration tools makes it easier than ever to share all this information with your family. It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com. We've done your homework.